And now, more You Talk Now.
Hey guys, welcome to You Talk. I'm Steve. Let me ask you this question. Are you or somebody you know experiencing the pain of being a victim? Now, maybe it's from bullying. Maybe it's a result of sexual abuse, racism, or maybe some other issue. There's so many ways that we can become victims in our culture today. But we want to give you some answers today from somebody who's been there. We're going to be talking with Cynthia Garrett. She is a TV host. She's an author. She's a speaker who has experienced the pain of being a victim. And in her latest book, she gives some very practical answers on how we can deal with being a victim, finding freedom, finding strength. There she is, Cynthia. Welcome to You Talk.
Hi.
Hey, it's so great to see you. This is so fun. Last time I saw you, we were having dinner with, 150 other people in Washington, D.C.
We were. Yes.
It's taken us that long to get you here. Now, you know what? I got to tell you, you are completing the bookend for the show, okay? Because you might remember that night, you were one of the speakers, and another guy named Lance Wilder was there from The Simpsons. And yeah. Lance was just on with us a few weeks ago. Great guy. He said to say hello to you. And he said, she's so great. I'm glad you got her. And we are. We're so excited. I know you've been busy. And this is just so cool. I'm looking forward to our discussion tonight. You are the first African-American woman to host a network TV show. It was called NBC's Late, if I'm not mistaken.
Later.
Okay, NBC's Later. And along the way, with your career, all the things you're doing, you travel, you speak, you write. Along the way, you experience some social injustice, sexual abuse, all kinds of other things. Give us kind of an overview of what you've been through.
Oh, man. Wow, an overview.
I know this necessitates, I think, a number of conversations. But give us an idea, because I think people in the audience will relate to what you have to say.
Well, you know, I think I went through a lot of stuff that, you know, some people, I guess, never go through in their life. You know, I mean, sexual abuse as a child. You know, rape as a teenage girl. I'm a cancer survivor. You know, I was a single mom. My first marriage was horribly abusive. And I got out of it I always thought it was a divorce, but I guess I never really said I was annulled. And, you know, and then a single mom for a long time until my son was like 14 and a half years old.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. And then I actually got cancer when he was about 15. So I feel like I've been through kind of like a lot of stuff.
Yes. You really, frankly, it's amazing you're sitting here today, you know, and doing what you're doing. And I was so struck by what you shared in DC. I don't know if you remember, I came up, I was one of those in line, and I said, we've got to have you on You Talk. And you're probably going, what is this? Who is this guy? And, but you were so gracious. And it's hard to imagine somebody going through so much and being just victimized like this, and yet you've got a gleam in your eyes, a smile on your face. You are being used all around the world. I know, remember the conversation, a couple of conversations we had while we were in D.C. And I mean, it's just, it's amazing. Many people in our audience have experienced the pain of being a victim too. Let's start with this is a big question, but how can we break out of this mentality of being a victim?
I think first of all, you got to realize that it's a choice.
Okay.
You know? First, you have to realize like, okay, sure, these things may have happened to me, Mm-hmm. But at some point, life and everybody else is no longer to blame. So at some point, you know, you kind of go, wow, I mean, anger and blame can really, they can destroy me. And not taking responsibility for who I become because of anger and blame can totally destroy me. So at some point for me, I just realized like, okay, you know, it's not about anger and blame. It's about making a choice to change my mindset. You know, like I think we have these voices that go through our head that, you know, they're the voices that are a part of the experiences we've been through, or they're the voices that are a part of the bad crap that people have laid on us or said to us. And you can carry all of that, and all of that can really weigh you down. And you can literally be choosing to be a victim and not realize that you're choosing to be a victim. So, yeah, it's like you get a victim's mentality, and it starts driving the narrative of your life.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Like it really is. That's huge.
It is.
What was it? Okay, all of these things. Was there one thing that triggered you to say, wait a minute, stop, time out. I don't want to be a victim anymore. I don't want to be defined this way. I don't want this narrative directing me. Or was it just a combination of things coming together, kind of coming to a head?
No. Well, I think it was, look, for me, I always have had I've always had a great faith, you know.
Okay.
I knew when I was a little girl and I was, you know, going through being sexually abused in my own home by a relative. I just had this relationship with God in some way. Mm-hmm. I had this sense that he was real. And I knew,
interesting.
Yeah. And I knew that he was taking care of me. I knew that he was getting me through, you know, I felt like there was a real spiritual warfare that was going on. And it was, you know, it was really childlike. It's still kind of childlike for me. It's like, you know, the bad spirits want to kill your good spirit. And it was that simple. I mean, I realized like, call it what you want. You know, some people call it light, you know, versus darkness, good versus evil, Satan versus God. Mm-hmm. You know? And in it for me, I just knew that Jesus was real and I would talk to him. And I was a child, so it's really odd. So I took this kind of real sort of faith, you know, something that I could hold on to, you know. So I think that helped set a foundation for me, you know, because at a certain point I chose, you know, to explore my faith, to understand what it was, that, you know, what was this thing that I felt that like had sustained me in some way. You know, what was this thing that gave me peace in some way? And so I don't know if that answered your question, but I know that always gave me a strength.
Well, you've brought up so many things, strength, peace, direction, motivation, and so much of that's lacking today. I mean, let's face it, our world, our culture has gone crazy. I mean, it's like everything's out of control. Everything is uncertain. We're being challenged more than we ever have. People are desperately searching for something to hang on to. They're searching. So many people I talk are looking for peace. They're looking for answers. And it culminated for you. And I think, to me, just to kind of go back to something you said, we have to, those of us that are struggling with being a victim, we've got to come to the point where we say, enough. I'm tired of this. And you know what's so sad is in our culture today, we see so many people, it's almost like they want to be victimized. That's what struck me so much when I heard you in DC. I thought, she has found freedom. And yet we've got people, it's almost like they want to walk into it and be a victim. I don't know if you've seen that, but
oh gosh,
you know, it's just way too many people, and you waste your life. I mean, life is so short. It's so precious. It makes no sense to me whatsoever to be wanting to be a victim.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you though, for me, writing this book was a really interesting journey because at the time I was, you know, I'd written the book and I turned it in. And then I literally went through like having to relive my sexual abuse because of this story, because of this movie, The Banker.
A movie
that Apple TV did. And it's based on my father and my mother's life. And
oh, really? I didn't know about that. Tell us.
Yeah. Well, my dad was the first black man to ever own banks in America. And he owned white banks, actually, 7 white banks and savings and loans in the South, in Texas.
Whoa.
In the early 60s, during civil rights era America. And my dad did that by disguising himself as a chauffeur or a janitor and using my mom's face or the face of another guy, a business associate of his that he trained, really, who was white. And they would pretend to be sort of the owners of the bank. And, you know, the movie sort of, I mean, wrote my mom out of the story and us out of the story and kind of made it as if it was my older half-brother's mom and him. And my older half-brother has been estranged from our family for years because he's the one who sexually abused my little sister and I for years when we were little.
Oh, Cynthia.
Yeah. And, so it was a big mess because, you know, we had to call time out, you know, time's up and enough is enough. And so Apple ended up pulling the movie for a while. And it was a big, big, huge nightmare in the press and going through this all over again and dealing with people, like, especially, you know, my dad's story is such an important story to African-American people, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
My parents marched on Washington with Martin Luther King. They were extraordinary people. But my father raised us never to be victims, ever. And so I knew that I was supposed to speak up because my dad, you know, I knew it. I knew my dad.
Yeah.
There was something in my spirit that was saying, no, you will not abuse me again. You will not abuse my little sister again. You will not abuse my mother. And so that.
Now, how old were you, by the way, at that point?
Well, my sister was 4 when her abuse started, and I was about 6 or 7.
Oh. And at what point then did you say, enough, we're done? This is not going to keep going.
Well, I mean, I was a child. I never said enough, we're done. It was, he ended up moving away, and he was sent to live back with his own mother. Well, he was a young man, so he moved out on his own, actually.
Okay.
He came to live with us because his mom couldn't handle him anymore when he got to be around 19 or 20 or what have you. And it's kind of a long story. You know, I talk a lot about it in my first book, Prodigal Daughter. But the greatest thing for me was kind of going back to your question was that here I was and I'm turning in this book called I Choose Victory, Moving from Victim to Victor.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose in my life again. Because of the story that made me feel like a victim in ways I've never felt like a victim before. Mm. And so I was reliving it all over again. Like literally, I mean, there were days I was curled in a ball on the floor.
Oh,
like,
Cynthia.
You know, even as a grown woman all these years later. And I remember it was like God said to me, you know, there's a grace in what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And then I began to get the lesson. What I was going through taught me something about my book. And it was like the lesson was that most people don't choose to be victims. They just don't know how to choose victory.
Oh!
And that was a powerful lesson that I had to really understand in order to have the empathy, you know, and the sympathy to look at people and go, I know that this person is choosing to be a victim. I know that this person is accepting a limitation on their life that they themselves have to change. Mm-hmm. I know this person is looking for a savior outside of themselves. It'll never happen. I know this person is angry and filled with blame and they need to get over it. It gave me the grace to look at that and go, but I know this person doesn't know how. And that's what my book is about.
That's powerful.
It's about the how.
That is so important because we talk so much about the problem. Okay, I'm a victim. Even the whys. I mean, you know that. But the how. And I want to go back. Give us that statement again. People choose. They don't choose to be victims.
Most people don't choose to be victims. They just don't know how to choose victory.
Oh, that's huge. I mean, that's really it in a nut. I mean, that's just, that's it. Yeah. I mean, that is so huge. And I hope people are listening to what you're saying, because this is powerful. This is freedom. We are talking about freedom. I mean, with, you know, people are that's a big thing in discussion in our culture right now. And, you know, your dad's story is a whole nother story that we need to talk about really sometime, because the whole thing with the racial tensions and the social injustice and all. And I mean, to me, from my limited vantage point with you, you would have every right to be a victim.
Sure.
Oh, no. I mean, with what you've been through.
Yeah. Look, I always say I could be the poster child for every victims group and movement today.
You could.
Black Absolutely. Lives Matter, Time's Up, you know, Me Too, you know, AA, you know, Sexual Abuse, Victims Anonymous, like any group you could possibly have. But you know what? Cancer survivors, single moms, all of it. But you know something, though? Through all of it, I always realized, you know, you can get stuck on stupid SOS, mm-hmm. or you can actually make a choice to get up. Look, it was the greatest lesson my father gave me, and he did so right before he died. And I asked him about all of his life. Mm-hmm. You know, Dad, you've been through all these things. I mean, I have pictures of my dad with LBJ.
He
used to have breakfast at the White House, like crazy,
unbelievable.
Crazy stories, right? Crazy
yeah.
stories. And, you know, just, I mean, my dad was the wealthiest black man in the country and the largest landowner at one time.
Wow.
He owned tons of real estate all around California, the banks in Texas, and a big, big, big life. But when he died, I was taking care of him. You mm-hmm. know? And I remember my father, when I asked him, you know, what's the meaning of life? My dad and I was a daddy's girl. So my dad and I spent a ton of time together, and I would sit at his bed for 3 years that he was sick, and every day. And
unbelievable.
We would talk. And I mean, really talk, you know. And mm-hmm. I asked him, you know, what's the meaning of life, Dad? And he said to me two things that I will never forget. First thing he said was people. He said, you need people, honey. You can't do anything without people. He said, it doesn't matter what color they are, because black people have helped me and hurt me, and white people have helped me and hurt me, and brown people have helped me and hurt me. He said, it doesn't matter, but you need people, good people.
Yes, yes.
That was lesson number one. Lesson number two was, and he said this, and I remember I had just gotten later on NBC, and I was getting paraded around, you know, by, mm-hmm. by NBC, the NAACP was sort of using me as their poster child.
Because
you know, that year they had really insisted that the networks have more diversity in front of the camera. So mm-hmm. I was given this show that was created for Bob Costas, and Greg Kinnear took it over for a while.
And then I
came along, and I actually ranked out of the ceiling. And that's
nice.
Why I went in, and I was getting tens on the show. And that's why I was given the show, you know. And so, you know, I was a little bit conflicted, because I was like, you know, Dad, I mean, I graduated in the top quarter of my class in law school. And I was like, you know, I wasn't an affirmative action baby. You know,
sure.
I bust my buns, you know, for everything.
Yep.
And I remember saying to him, what do we do? Like, how do I represent well with everything?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my father said to me, he said, you know, honey, he said, black people have to really get over. They got to get over something that it's foolish. And I remember looking at my son, I don't understand what you mean.
Yeah, interesting.
And he said, you're a victim for the first 5 minutes that someone does you a harm. He said, in those first 5 minutes, I want you cry, you kick, you scream, you get it out of your system. He said, but after 100 years, 40 years, 50 years, you're a darn fool, because you have got to learn to take the hand that life gives you and play it well. If not, you're choosing to be a victim, and never, ever choose to be a victim. And that really hit me, because
you
were talking about being black and, you know, the struggle to get where you want to go and all mm-hmm. these different things. And it shocked me to hear my father say this. His banking empire and his his real estate empire were toppled because of racism. Because, you know, white politicians in the South at that time found out that two black men actually owned all these banks and indicted them on trumped up bank fraud charges. And it became a big case. And
unbelievable.
Actually, you want to hear something crazy?
Yeah.
It was Joe Biden's mentors.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So those two things that your dad taught you are two things. I wish I could have talked to him. I wish I could have known him. Oh, I mean,
no, he was truly amazing. And it's interesting because I was talking about the whole Joe Biden thing.
Yeah.
My family went through so much in those. I mean, my father was brought up on these trumped up bank fraud charges by the McClellan Senate Investigations Subcommittee. Ooh. And a lot of McClellan's buddies at the time were the guys that mentored Joe Biden. So for me, like, historically, knowing my father and what my parents went through and living it and always being connected to what my father accomplished and what he tried to do to help blacks, to to break Jim Crow laws. And I mean, he was an amazing man.
He is, goodness.
But it's hard for me not to have a lot of like animosity toward that. I mean, not that I don't forgive, but I don't have any allegiances to political parties at this point in my life. I don't, because I'm African American, I don't just vote Democrat. I really don't. I try to vote my faith, my conscience.
Understandable.
The things I believe in.
Yeah.
And I know it's really hard today because you can't. I feel like so many people, they're pulled by kind of trending politics and Hollywood voices, and no one's really getting quiet with themselves and thinking like, well, what's really right and wrong, and then which one of these knuckleheads is going to do the most right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's wrong. This political environment.
Yeah,
I just don't understand it. People need to step back for themselves, first of all.
Oh, yeah. It's like the people that begged for tolerance are no longer very tolerant.
No, exactly. That's what bothers me so much. And that is so, that's the antithesis of what it's supposed to be. You know, can we not agree to disagree?
Right.
And, you know.
And I say this to make the point. I feel like a lot of people criticize today. But they don't help. They don't help anything.
No.
They just sit and they criticize. And I was raised by parents and by grandparents who said to me, if you don't have a heart to help, shut your mouth and don't criticize.
Oh,
so it's true. So I
listen
to all these people and you can't feel that way. You can't say that. You don't understand. And I'm like, look, while you're busy sitting there armchair quarterbacking politics and what the nation needs to do and what makes a black life matter, I'm too busy over here investing in black lives with my time and my money.
Yep.
So all the rest of you, go ahead, black out your Instagram page. My life is blacked out. My heart is blacked out. And so I get so crazy with all of it. You know, it's like I had a girlfriend who called. Oh, she's white. And in the beginning of everything, she called to apologize. And I said, if you apologize to me for being white, I'm going to smack you.
Oh,
I said, because if you really want to change something, go talk to your network and tell them, hire me. I'm really good. Don't apologize for what God made you. Like, God created us all. He created me.
Absolutely.
Look, this is me. That's it.
Yep.
I'm not apologizing for who I am. And I don't need anybody to tell me my black life matters because I know it does.
Yeah, I mean, every life matters, your black life, my Italian life. I mean, we all matter, you know. Now, that brings me to something that here at UTalk is really center, a core value of what we do. And that is we're really big on making a difference, changing the world. What's one thing, Cynthia, that all of us can do? I mean, I know there's a lot of changing and it's a massive thing, and I'm not trying to oversimplify these things, but to me, it's not rocket science. If all of us did something to change the world, to make a difference, things would be different. So what's the suggestion you have for our audience? What's one thing we could do that would make a difference, that could begin the change, or we could be the change?
Gosh, open your heart and your mind to each other and and to someone, not just someone who's different but thinks like you.
Uh-huh.
Someone who's different in that they don't think like you.
Oh.
That's a sign to me of true, a true desire to change is about a true desire to listen to other people and to understand. And I don't think that people listen. Nobody's trying to listen to each other.
No.
No one's trying to understand.
No.
I love the phrase fake news because it is it is fake.
It is.
Oh, let me tell you everything you want to hear because I care about you.
Yeah.
We care about you on this channel. This channel is for you. It's all fake. If you when you care about people, love is spelled T-I-M-E.
Absolutely.
Love is messy. Love is inconvenient. Love is the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning. Loves you when you make the same mistake for the 25th time.
Exactly.
You know, and that's, we don't extend that to other people at all. And we need to. And then the other thing I would say is find a young person to adopt, man. Find a young person to love on and to mentor. And when you get old, you'll never feel old. And I know that there was one point when my son was still in college. He graduated a few years ago. My boys did. And my husband and I looked at each other and we, some grownups were coming over. Now, my son played basketball. My son Christian played basketball at the University of Kansas. So like someone's parents or something were coming over or some, one of the boosters, I don't know. And I remember I looked at my husband and I said, we've been surrounded by young people for 3 years. Have we had grownups in this house? And like, and literally, and he goes, no, and it's been fantastic. Because, yeah, I mean, young people are refreshing.
Yes, know, they are.
They are. And they keep you young and they keep you real and they listen if they know that you actually love them and you care about them.
They do. They really, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's the heartbeat of what I do, you know, before COVID, doing school assemblies and hanging out with younger people. We are blessed because we have interns. We've got a couple interns right now that are just amazing and learn so much from them, but it definitely keeps you younger. I like the mindset. I like the thinking outside of the box. I just like the energy. And, you know, hey, if you want to be act like an old person and sit on a rocking chair, go ahead, act like an adult, do that. But, you know, it's, and I have friends who are always looking at me going, Russo, are you ever going to grow up and be an adult? Nope. Sorry. Have no plans of that. You know, I'm going to be a kid as long as I can be a kid because I love it. I have so much fun.
I know. Oh, I love someone wrote on the screen, also apologize when you're wrong.
Yes.
Yeah, I got to tell you. That's really true. And one of the reasons why I feel like my son allowed us to be so a part of his college experience and his experience his entire life. You know, I've always been the mom that was involved and in the middle with all his friends and stuff. I think one of those reasons was at a certain point when he was about 15 years old, I sat him down and my faith was really growing. And I was really like, I was doing the work on myself. You know, so I was looking in the mirror and I was like, okay, you made this mistake. You made that mistake. Wow, you shouldn't have done this. I wanted to be a better parent and I could see where
sure. You know,
being a young single mom at that point, I could see where I had made mistakes and I sat him down one day and I knew that forgiveness was a huge spiritual key that opens a lock.
Yes.
And I sat down with him and I made a list of everything that I needed to own and apologize to him for. Because my fiance at the time, the man who became my husband and my son's father, adopted him. He said to me, if you own everything and if you allow forgiveness in your life, you'll experience freedom in an incredible way. And so I knew that I didn't want my son to make the same mistakes that I had made. But I also knew that the odds were that he would if I didn't own them first. And so I sat down and I went down the list of everything that I did wrong in front of him as a single mom. Honey, you know, I probably shouldn't have lived with this ex-boyfriend. Will you forgive me? I know you got your heart broken there. And, you know, the first few things I went through, he kind of just looked at me like, what?
What's but up then, with mom?
Right. And then though, halfway through, he just had tears in his eyes because, of course, they're not stupid. They know.
They know
what was right and what was wrong. And then I said, honey, you got to say it out loud because it's kind of a spiritual thing. Do you forgive me? Yes, mommy, I forgive you. Okay. Remember when I did this? Yes, mom. I know that you knew that it was wrong, didn't you? Even though you were a little boy. Yes, mom. Okay. Will you forgive me? Yes, mom. Honey, you know how I used to curse a lot? Yes, mom. Okay. I really don't want you to be a cursing teenage boy in my house. So can you forgive me for cursing? Yes, mom. Great. Now you're not going to do it because you know it's wrong, right? Yes, mom. I'm telling you.
That's literally powerful.
It broke everything off of my son's life. My son really and truly, he's made his own mistakes, but he never made the extreme mistakes that I made. He's never been a big drinker. He's never been no drugs, no alcohol.
That's incredible.
There's just certain things that, and he's always picked amazing friends.
Huh.
Always picked amazing friends. That's why I have so many adopted kids.
Oh, sure.
If you brought him home, I knew I could love him. You know?
I knew it.
And and I know that it's because I wasn't afraid or ashamed to apologize and own my stuff. And, you know, my husband always says to me that one of the reasons he fell in love with me was he said, you were always the realest girl I knew.
Oh, said, you are.
But he said, but not just real with other people. He said, you are so real with yourself. It's almost frightening. And I am.
Ooh.
I'm like, why would I be invested in lying to myself?
Oh, you know, so many nuggets of wisdom, Cynthia. I mean, being real with yourself. That is so freeing. I mean, it had to be with your son that day. That had to be a freeing experience for you and for him. And relationally and in community, if we can be real with ourselves. And I've always said the four most powerful words that we could say to somebody else is, will you forgive me?
Yeah.
And there's sometimes some of the hardest to. I can think of friends and relatives. I've never heard them say, I'm sorry. I've never heard them say, will you forgive me? You know, and they've got to be just crumpled up inside. I mean, this discussion, we're going to have to bring it to an end, unfortunately, for now, but we have got to have you back on again. This has just been powerful. Wonderful conversation, and definitely have to work this out when we can make it work with schedules. Now, how can people get more of you on, say, on social? How can they follow you? What's your handle?
Well, I'm at Cynthia Garrett on Instagram.
Okay.
And Cynthia Garrett Ministries on Facebook. And I'm at Spiritual Chick on Twitter.
Okay.
And if you want to get my book or find out anything about my TV program, I have my TV show that airs around the world, actually. And we're launching a new TV show in addition to that one. I also air on a platform called lightsource.com where you can watch my programs. But we're launching, I do a Friday webinar that you can sign up for. It's pretty cool. It's like a kind of a girls fellowship called Girl Club every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Coast time, 2 o'clock East Coast. It's called Girl Club. And you can find out everything at ichoosevictory.com or cynthiagarrett.org.
Excellent. And that's two places also where we can get the book, correct?
Yes. It's on Amazon, but if you go to either of the sites, it'll take you right through to Amazon.
Oh, perfect. Now, I highly recommend, I'm saying because I haven't read the book yet, I'm going to, but I highly recommend it. Just this conversation alone, and you have taken us down a path today on the show that has been just unreal. And the realness, the heart, forgiveness, all these topics. And I hope people that have joined us are listening, have listened to you, and will. We will post all of these things in the blog so people can follow you, get the book, stay in touch, go to the webinar, see your TV show. And again, Cynthia, thank you. I know you're super busy, and I'm just so grateful you would take time like this. I was so stoked when I heard back that you were going to be able to join us. And as I said, we hope we can have you on again sometime, because this conversation needs to continue, because our audience needs to hear what you have to say. You're very gifted. Thanks for being real. Thanks for your heart. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for joining us. It's been great to have you.
Thanks, Todd. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is U Talk Radio.